Welcome to the Relational Podcast with me, Leslie, and my colleague, Christine. This is where we explore workplace relationships and how restorative and relational practice enable compassionate leadership, civility and respect, giving everyone in our team the confidence to talk about difficulties, differences, and safety. So I guess it'd be a good point to, for the benefit of the listener, to take them through that journey of how this all started, where this all started as what we call restorative justice. Where did that come from? And then we can talk a little bit more maybe about how it's evolved into restorative practice.
Okay.
What the similarities are between justice and practice, what the differences are, and what that might mean for the listener. I'm going to invite you to tell the story of where restorative justice first evolved, simply because you're such a good storyteller.
Oh, thanks, Leslie. My learning was that it came from Canada, Australia, New Zealand, First Nation tribes, and Thames Valley Police piloted what they'd seen with young people in the youth justice system. And they say it became the jewel in the crown of the youth justice system. But what they'd seen was, for example, the Maori people said, it's outrageous the way you treat young people in the justice system. You stand them in a box in court, somebody speaks for them, they don't have their own voice. It's humiliating, shame-inducing. That's not what we do. We sit in a circle and together we hear from one another who's been hurt, who's caused the harm, what needs to happen to repair that harm. And this was the inspiration to bring back here. But some people say, well, it's wider than that. Someone once told me that imagine this country before the Normans invaded, when we were all in little villages. And when things happened, villagers would get together probably in a tent or a dome building or something and sit round in a circle together, and they'd hear from the people, just like the Maoris, the people who'd been harmed. It might be, well, you've stolen our cow, so we want your daughter. I mean, I don't know what kind of primitive restorative justice it would have been, but it would have been people agreeing together and saying, we need to sort it out. And that makes me think we've just gradually lost that ability to sit together as people and figure out what we need to do and to hear from one another. Now, it's as if we just hand it all to experts. Oh, I've got a problem with my neighbour, I'll write to the council. Oh, I've got a problem at work, I'll fill in a disciplinary form, or I'll go to my boss. It's like we seem to have lost that simple ability to say, you and I don't agree on this, or you've hurt me, or I've upset you. Let's sit together like this, like we are, face to face. Let's take turns and see if we can find a way through and find out what we need to do to put this behind us or to move forward or for one of us to put it right with the other. And it's that interested me, how we've lost that skill. And it seems that what should be natural to us is now something we have to learn. And what we see when we do teach it is that people can learn it quickly and can take the simplest principle, because I love simple. I studied lots of psychological theories and I used to teach it, but I need something simple that I can carry around in my mind to deal with the everyday issues that come up, whether it's at work or when we go home from work and with our neighbours or our children or somebody on the bus or the train. I need something that helps me through that. And that, for me, is what restorative practice does. It's the carpet underneath the furniture, the principles that give us that feeling of we know what to do when something goes wrong.
And just to go back to how prisons, probation services, youth justice services in the UK learnt from First Nation cultures about restorative justice, about holding somebody to account in a fair and open way.
Yeah.
How that was then brought into our criminal justice system and is still working in that way, bringing victims and offenders together. And it's a highly experienced restorative practitioner, a conference facilitator who does that work.
Yeah.
There's lots of planning involved. There's a risk assessment, preparation of individuals before the meeting even takes place. And it's moved, hasn't it? It's evolved, if you like, into what we now call restorative practice. And some people call it restorative approaches. Mm. And it's bringing those principles, the ones that underpin, and the theories that underpin a successful restorative conference, bringing them into our everyday. And I think also, certainly whilst I've been in the business of restorative practice, so it's become almost like a magpie, because we have borrowed a number of philosophies, psychologies, theories, and we use them to help people make sense of the thinking behind this. Because, and I know you've said it's really simple, and it is.
Simple but not simple.
Simple but not simple. It is simple, but in order to really subscribe to it, and I think in order for it to be as authentic as it can be, we do need to have that very sound theoretical underpinning and understanding, to the point that restorative practice is what we call an evolving social science.
It is.
It's not just how we do things around here. It's not just about having good relationships and being able to talk about difficulties and conflict. We do that because we understand how it works.
Yeah, I always say, don't I, Leslie, give me a criminal and a victim anytime, because that's straightforward. One person's hurt another, they need to explore what that person needs to do to fix it or put it right to some extent. Whereas in our everyday relationships and interactions, they're more complicated. And what we're learning is it's the simplest things, those simple moments of stepping forward to speak to somebody that stop us. Our stomach goes over, or we just don't want to risk we might upset someone, or somebody might be angry with us. So we need some theoretical underpinning of how we're going to approach those things, and we also need to practice and refresh regularly.
And then I guess to continue that journey, if you like, from restorative justice to restorative practice, and we're now doing a body of work with the NHS and helping to apply the theory, the principles, the processes, the practice to different roles within the NHS, to clinical teams, to non-clinical teams, to staff, managers, leaders. We've even met the board or boards of NHS trusts to talk about this. There is a real interest in it. And I think some listeners who work for the NHS may well have heard of the Just and Learning culture, which is, again, something slightly different, but also related to restorative practice. And the Just and Learning culture was begun, I understand, by Mersey Care, and it's their way of moving away from a culture of blame to a culture of open understanding, open discussion. When harm has been caused, fairly serious harm, it may involve patients, it may involve patients' families, bringing parties together to talk about it, to find a way forward. And I also understand that that is now evolving itself, and I can see literature and I hear people talk about a little bit more about what I define as restorative practice. So what can we do on a day-to-day basis before things have got to that point to create a culture where people will speak to each other and talk to each other and overcome differences as quickly as possible? So the Just and Learning culture is almost running on a track alongside restorative practice at the minute, and I think there are bridges already.
And it's back to simplicity again. I like to think, how can we simply help people to have principles that they can carry around in their minds? They don't have to read a massive, thick textbook. Simple, everyday principles and structures that they can use right away to help to make this easier, going round to the neighbours. So, Leslie, we're talking about keeping things simple.
Mm.
Let's look at all these simple structures that people can learn really quickly that help to give them a way of approaching conflicts wherever they are, whether they're in the workplace, with their partners, children, on a bus, on a train. Let's tell them all about that.
Mm. And alongside that, we'll talk about some of those underpinning psychologies, theories, principles that it's really important to know about in order to make this work.
Okay.
Thank you for listening. We hope you've learned something and that you feel brave enough to give it a go. See you next time.